Well, let's just mosey on down this road and talk about the news, according to me. Good morning. It's already Friday. Not that I'm sad about that. But it is Friday. The date is December 10th, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. Here in the northern part of the state, I should say. It's also a northern state. A northern part of the northern state of Indiana. I'm drinking chai with Cinnabon Creamer. I'm almost out of Cinnabon Creamer, so my creamer next week will be something else. No, I'm probably going to be traveling over the weekend again. At least it looks that way. I have a dog scratching the floor below me. He decides to do that every time I start my show. I don't know what it is about this thing. He just does this. You would think he does it all the time because whenever I start the show, he starts scratching the floor, trying to dig a hole to crawl in and run away from the... He's trying to get away, trying to dig a hole to China. There he goes. I'll just let him go until he gets tired of doing that. So, sorry for the noise in the background there. Is that working for you? Is that working for you, doggy? I also have a backup cup this morning. My backup cup has a... Well, I didn't put it... Actually, I was going to put some peach nectar in it. But I have tea. Boy, he's really going at it. Stand by one moment. I got him to stop. There we go. for now. I have a cup full of, it's got a little bit of tea, kind of watered down tea. And I've got orange juice and some more V8 Fusion peach mango in there. So now you know what's going to happen during the show. I'm going to get this chai drink, and I'm going to start drinking that stuff, and it's going to be going from accelerated to hyperspeed. So I'm going to mosey into some issues this morning. I'm going to dive right into it, probably without doing very much in terms of stories. You know how I am about stories. I like to tell stories. It's meaningless drivel that I just kind of drone on about my past and how things used to be back in the day. Back in the golden days, the golden years, the good old days when I was a kid. Everyone usually has fond memories of when they were a kid normally. Some people don't. That's too bad. And it's sad if you don't have that experience of as a child of having a good childhood. I had a pretty good childhood. Did some crazy stuff. They all thought I was a good kid because I never got caught. See, my brother and my sister were quite a bit older than me. Just about old enough to where I learned how to, I would see how they would get caught doing things. They would get in trouble. And I was a pretty good student of staying out of trouble. So I learned how to sneak around. I figured out that, if you do that you're going to get caught. Should have done it this way. I had plenty of time to think about it. By the time I was their age doing those things, I had, 7 or 8 years to think about it. How I was going to do that the first time, or just not do that because it was stupid. But that, you don't think about those things when you're a kid. You just think about how you're going to get away with it. I'm down to my last sip here of this chai. I just got a notice that I have a membership for AARP. I have a discount offer to join AARP. AARP. I can talk. The organization that takes your money and then Well, you get some discounts here and there. That doesn't cost them a dime, by the way. They go around and they have this big membership, though. That what they do is they approach companies. Here's how AARP works. They take your money so that you can get discounts. You join this organization. It's an organization that then goes out with all these members. And they talk to people like, oh, I don't know, like Holiday Inn. And they say, we have 45 billion members. Of course, then Holiday Inn says, there's only 7 billion people on the planet. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Now, they'll say they have, you know, X number of members. Might be millions. I don't know how many they got. Could just be 1,000. They might just be saying they've got 1 million. I don't know. They only have 3. And so they have all these members. And they approach them and they say, we want to offer them discounts for membership. So then you get this discount when you go to, say, Holiday Inn or Super 8 or Motel 6. They'll leave the light on for you. Well, they should shut it off because they need to save some money on that electric bill. They're not very green, are they? You notice that stopped. Old Tom Baudet stopped talking about leaving the light on for you because that's, you know, it's not very green. You're killing trees there, Tom. So they go to these companies. They offer, you know, they offer you benefits, discounts. People like Verizon. And Verizon says, okay, yeah, we'll give them a discount because, you know, we got that many customers could potentially, we'll get a percentage of those customers here because they'll get a discount. So they might get, say, 5% of the more customers or you know, 5% of those people who are members, at least, 5 or 10% of those people who are members might come and be there, you know, so they get a little bit more market share that way. And because of that, you know, then AARP, basically all they do is take your money and they negotiate deals for you. On the other hand, you could just, you know, walk up. Most hotels you can walk up to, especially nowadays, you can just walk up to and say, what's your best price? And they'll say, well, it's, you know, $3,000 a night. And you'll say, I'll give you $100. They'll say, okay. Do you want your room cleaned? Okay, I'll give you $110. Stuff like that. That's one of the things that I learned. I said I wasn't going to tell any stories, but here I go. I'm already rolling into a story here. One of the things that I don't know if this is in the Art of the Deal. I've never read the Art of the Deal, but I have just, you know, discovered in life fairly early on that if you want a deal, you have to be willing to walk away from the deal. I learned, I used to be a car guy. I used to like to buy cars and stuff. And, of course, I bought a couple of cars at a young age, and they enslaved me with payments on those cars. They weren't even new cars, but a couple of used cars. And I had car payments, so I had to have a job. Even in high school, I had a job, a part-time job in high school to pay for my car. I had a 72 Blazer. 71 Blazer. I think it was a 71. The first one I had, I think, was a 71 Blazer. Chevy Blazer. Ragtop. Standard transmission. It was a good truck. Safe. Good safe vehicle for me. Didn't get good gas mileage, but it was good. Good car. So I drove that thing. I also had a payment on it. My credit union loaned me the money for it. I was making payments to do my thing. Because that's the American way. You know, you get yourself into debt and then you dig yourself out. Put yourself into more debt and you just keep digging yourself out. You're selling yourself basically as an indentured servant to the bank. You don't see it that way, but that's what's really happening there. But that's the way everybody does it, or that's the way everybody used to do it. It's not the way I do it anymore. But that's the way we do it in this country. So we're running around. with these cars. So I did, you know, I bought cars even at a young age. I was buying and selling stuff. It was boats and cars and stuff. It was just like tinkering around with junk. It was just junk stuff. And I figured out that I could walk into a car dealership, especially a used car dealership, and they had a price of, you know, whatever it was, $8,000 or whatever on their car. And I had friends that would, you know, would take me along with them to negotiate for them on getting deals on a car. This one friend of mine, very distinctly, he went to a Subaru dealer and they were trying to get him sold on this all-wheel drive coupe Subaru. And he was trying to buy this car. He really liked this car. It's turbocharged. Coupe. Ugly thing. But it was a pretty cool car. I mean, it was actually... Now all the dogs are coming down to say hello. All the dogs are coming down here. They want to hear the story. It's story time for the dogs. You're all interested in seeing what's going on here. They're my only audience. So I went to get this car. And, of course, the car dealer was... talking to him, trying to get him involved in this, trying to get him wrapped up in this car. So I said, you know what? I said, they wanted to put him into a loan. No cosigner. With $500 down, could buy a $12,000 car. Brand new. This kid was 19 years old. Now, I think I was maybe 21 at the time, something like that. I said, you know what, let's go over to this other dealer. Let me show you what we can do. So we went to this other dealer. It was a used car dealer. And we looked at this used car. It was a Honda Civic. Good car. I think they were asking $8,000 for the thing. It's like 2 years old. It was on a lot where they were just trying to unload this thing because they were not a Honda dealer. They were something else. And they wanted to get rid of this Honda because it was they just took it on trade-in. They were trying to get rid of it. We took it for a test drive, came back. I said, what's your bottom dollar on this thing? They said, $7,000 is the lowest we can take on it, or something like that. I said, well, that's $6,000 cash. That's all I'll give you for it. Take it or leave it. He talks to his manager. Of course, did the whole manager thing. Well, I got to talk to my manager about that. We'll sharpen our pencil, see what we can do here. Comes back and says, okay, we'll sell it for $6,000. I said, okay, well, we're going to go talk about it. Come back. See if that's the one he wants to get. This guy thought he was selling the car. Of course, he wasn't selling the car. I was just, you know, messing around because I was a kid. I was stupid. I didn't realize I was wasting his time. But I want to teach this other friend of mine a lesson. We walked out of there. This was an $8,500 car, sticker price. We could have walked out of there for $6,000 with that car. The Subaru, there was no bending on the price. It was $12,000. Of course, he was financing it because he didn't have the cash. But yeah, he was getting his money from a credit union, same credit union I was banking at. But he ended up buying the new car. I really want the new car. Okay, so you want the new car. Go ahead and get the new car. He had a decent paying job, of course, obviously, because they wouldn't have loaned him the money if he didn't. No cosigner, got the car. Got back, and his parents thought it was nuts. Of course. I bought a Honda Accord one time. I brought it home and asked my dad to co-sign for it. I was on a test drive. My dad said, you got no business buying a car like that. It was a $4,000 car, something like that. It was a used, like a one-year-old Honda Accord, 1984 or something like that. He didn't think I had any business buying that car. So I went back to the bank, and the bank, I had two banks fighting for my business. And one of them said, well, we'll do it without a cosigner. And the other bank said, well, we'll do it without a cosigner and we'll give you a lower interest rate. So I signed the papers and I walked off with the car. I also had a trade-in. I had another car traded in. And, yeah, I drove the car home. My dad freaked out. You bought the car. Huh. And I made the payments on the car. Because I had a job. That's how I did that. It was crazy. So, And in fact, I drove that car until it had about 210,000 miles, I think, on it, something like that. I ended up selling that car to my parents, actually, for a small time. When I went off to college, I sold them the car, and when I got back out of college, I bought it back from them. Yeah. My mom drove that car for a while. So, needless to say, it was not a bad investment. It was a good car. And I learned something during that whole process. You know, all those things were learning processes during that whole thing. And I learned that, you know, I had other friends after that that would invite me to go along with them as they negotiated for a car. And of course, the whole process was, I'll look the car over and see if there's anything wrong with it and that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm mechanically inclined. I can do that. But I also know that the art of getting a good deal on a car is being willing to walk away. Because I guarantee you, now I just recently bought a car down in Texas. I have travel benefits in which I can, you know, I can travel basically for nothing. So if you want to call it that, I traveled for nothing, got down there into Austin, Texas, and picked up this car and drove it home. Because I, you know, it's easy to do. Now, were there no other cars between here and Austin, Texas that I could have bought for the same amount of money for, you know, with that particular brand and that particular type of car? Probably. There are probably all kinds of cars between here and there that would have been a better deal. I don't know. Maybe I could have got one for less. I don't know. But I was willing to walk away from the deal. If I had gotten down there and this thing was junk and it wasn't what he, you know, represented, I would have walked out. But I basically asked him, you know, what his bottom dollar was. He said, well, I just refused an offer for this amount, but I would take this amount. I said, now, I want you to realize I'm a cash buyer, and I will literally be there within a day to buy the car if you bring the price down to the point where I can afford it. I said, this was my budget. I told him what my budget was. He said, the car is a little over my budget, and I'm willing to meet you halfway. He said, okay. This is my bottom dollar. So that's what he gave me. So he gave me a price. I said, I will be there tomorrow afternoon with cash in hand. Of course, it was later in the day because I kept getting messed around with weather and all kinds of other issues trying to get down there. However, I made it down there. Now, this is an interesting story. Side note to the story. Another story to the story. There was a story recently about a guy who, it's been in the news all over the place. And you hear about the big ones, you don't hear about all the small ones. There's this little thing that the Congress has designed, and this was actually under Biden's oversight. And he's championed this whole thing, that Congress did a great thing for the president. That in the process of doing a drug deal, now this sounds like, you know, something that sounds great, but it's called punishment beyond due process. And here's what it is. let's say someone is out there doing drug or selling drugs, and I you know, report them and they get caught. There are some states, there are some federal organizations, I won't mention who they are, but they rhyme with the FBI. If they catch you, they prosecute you. Actually, even if they don't, federal prosecute you. If they catch you doing a drug deal, for instance, and you're carting drugs, let's say you're hauling drugs from one, you know, in your car somewhere. You're a mule, as they say, delivering drugs to a dealer, whatever. And they catch you in the process. They can not only seize the drugs themselves, they can seize any cash you have on you. They can also seize your car. And under this new legislation, they can seize your home and your bank accounts and anything else you have, anything, boats, cars, buses, whatever you've got. Everything you have, they can take it all away just because they caught you in a crime. None of those other things had anything to do with your crime, but they can take away all those things from you. Even if you don't get prosecuted, they can keep them. It has become so ridiculous now that even if they suspect that the money could be criminal money, for instance, there's the guy, he took $40,000. He was going to buy a car with a truck with cash. He even showed the documents to the, he was traveling through TSA, through the airport. He had $40,000 on him in cash. Now, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, right? This is just the opposite. It's just such an unconstitutional bit of legislation that needs to be challenged. The officer basically said, I'm suspicious of you. We're seizing your money. And there's nothing he could do about it. There's no proof in the world that he could offer. He had documents showing he was going to pick up this car and all this other stuff. They wouldn't accept that. They thought he was doing drugs, dealing drugs. And they kept his money. He's still fighting for it today. This is over a year ago. Some other lady had, I think, $100,000, and she was traveling someplace. She got pulled over, and the police officer was asking all these questions. You know how they're doing something, they start asking you questions. Oh, how you doing? Where are you going? What's happening? Where do you work? What do you do? They start asking you all these questions. And of course, if you don't answer the questions, that raises, he's not answering any questions. He's not answering questions. He's suspicious. He's acting suspicious. And they find money. This one guy disclosed that he had money in his truck. He said, no, I don't have any weapons, I don't have anything. He just wanted to get on his way. Oh, but I do have cash. Yeah, I have cash, a bunch of cash. This might have been the guy with $40,000, actually. I mean, $40,000, whatever it was he had, $100,000, $40,000, whatever it was. And they just said, well, we're going to seize the money because we don't know what you're doing with it. And this has happened over and over and over. It usually happens with much smaller amounts. Oh, you got $1,000 cash with you, and we're going to take it. And of course, you're not going to fight that. You got to pay a lawyer to get that back. You're going to fight the government, try to get that money back. They just seize cash all the time. This is just it's like a money-making scheme for them where they can just take money from you. And this happens all the time. Some states are really bad about it. Now, I guarantee you, if I were to be carrying, even, and recently buying this car, by the way, I traveled with $10,000 cash on me. When I went through TSA, I did not put it in my luggage because I was not going to have them taking my money. It would not have turned out very pretty for me. I would have freaked out. I don't know what I would have done. And so I put the money in my sock, walked through the thing, and kept on going. I kept that money in my sock all the way to Texas. Got there and pulled it out of my sock. Gave it to the guy. Stinky money. There's your stinking money, your filthy money. It smells like dirty socks. And that was the only way I was going to make it through. I didn't know. I had no interest at all in TSA seeing that money, thinking that they were going to let me go through security with that money. Wasn't going to happen. Now, was it what I did illegal? I don't know. I filed the paperwork that I took the money. I told that stuff. I showed the paperwork to the buying the car and all that kind of stuff. I paid all my taxes on the car, all that stuff. Assuming what I did was okay. But, there's probably some regulation or federal thing I probably didn't do. And if anyone's listening that's going to report me, this is just a story. This didn't actually happen. I didn't really do that. I'm just telling a story. Actually, I heard somebody else tell the story, and I'm just plagiarizing. There you go. Arrest me for plagiarization. So this forfeiture thing, is really unconstitutional. They can just take your money and not. I get it. There's a lot of drug dealers out there. If you can kind of hit them in the pocketbook, that's good. It seems like a good thing. Problem is that more innocent people are being hurt by this thing than there are drug dealers being hit by this thing, in my opinion. So let's move on. Let's move on to something else that's more nefarious. Now, there's this thing I'm going to talk about. I'm not sure which one of these to talk about first. Dr. Campbell. You've heard me talk about Dr. Campbell before. His name is Dr. John Campbell. I guess that's his name. That's the name of his YouTube channel. He has, what does he have here for subscribers? He's got 1.7 million subscribers. Typically, he gets about 500,000 views. This is December 9th that he put this thing out yesterday, and he's already got 500,000, almost, he's got 404,000 views on this particular video. He's talking about the Omicron growth in Norway. This is an interesting story. Let's start at the beginning of this and see what he has to say here. Because this story is, the first thing he has to say is interesting. And then he makes another comment, and it's, I hope he's trying to just relate the virus to kind of something that people can understand. Because I think in reality, I think he understands that a virus doesn't have its own, the virus doesn't have a collective brain or a thought pattern or a thought process. It just is out there and it does what it can. And when it mutates, it tends to mutate into something either that's going to help it get along further, or it's going to just mutate into something that's, it's the results. It's not thinking about, well, I need to mutate into this so I can do that. It's just mutating. And whatever mutation kind of wins the day is the one that just goes the furthest, the longest. It's not thinking. It doesn't have a brain. It doesn't think about anything. So I think people have a tendency to think that, well, the virus is out there and it's trying to get us. Well, the virus is out there, but we're talking about billions of little particles that don't talk to each other. They're just out there drifting along trying to survive, each one of them individually. If they pick the wrong host, they can't survive very long. They end up dying anyway. So here's the story of a man named Brady. This guy, let's listen to this. First of all, let's listen to his little spiel here at the beginning. It's really interesting. This one party that was in Norway. I don't know when this party happened. He has the dates here. We'll listen to it. Now, I've got this thing set up on a faster speed. I should probably adjust this because it's going to be way too fast to really even understand what he's saying because he's British. It's hard enough to understand. He might be Australian. I don't know. I think he's British. Anyway, I think he's Australian or New Zealand. I don't know where he's from. So we'll get into this. He's got an accent. Let's just put it that way. He doesn't talk proper English like I do. So we're gonna talk about this and listen to this first initial story that he talks about here.
Well, welcome to today's talk. It's Thursday, the 9th of December. I want to do a bit of an Omicron update. Still reasonably optimistic, but let's go into some detail straight away on this. Now, this one is the Louise restaurant bar and the night of the 26th of November. So this is Oslo, and it's a Christmas party, pretty early Christmas party, I would say, but nevertheless. Scartec Solar Power Company, one or two return travellers.
So now keep in mind, this is the 26th of November he's talking about. When did we hear about Omicron? Or Omicron, as he talks about it. Just last week. So this was already in Oslo, Norway. But let's
from South Africa. There was actually two travellers returned from South Africa. Only one of them turned out to be positive, though, for SARS coronavirus 2. Had returned a few days earlier, so had been knocking around as normal in Norway after his return, where there was fairly limited restrictions, actually, at that time. Now, there's 120 people went to this party. 120, all doubly vaccinated from the...
120 people. Let's make sure we get the facts here. 120 people, all doubly vaccinated. In other words, they had both shots.
From the Santec Solar Power Company Group. And they had their own Christmas dinner and everything. Then about 11:30 when there was a... It was a bit later on. They started mingling with people outside later on from other guests from the hotel. Now, there were 70 of the 120 tested positive the day after, or in the days after, and 50 others from the hotel as well. So that's a total of 120 people testing positive.
So 70 people days after this, from one person supposedly, all of them doubly vaccinated, all of them tested positive. 70 of them tested positive. An additional 50 from the hotel and surrounding area also tested positive. Now, that means 50 people at the party who were a part of the organization did not contract the virus. 50 other people outside of the party contracted the virus. Now, half of these tested positive for Omicron. He's going to talk about this in a little bit. And 13 proven in sequencing. So, and that 13 proven in sequencing means that they could contact trace those individuals to each other. So that there was others that they assume somehow contracted it through this party, but they're not sure. Now, we keep hearing that vaccinated individuals, you know, you have to get vaccinated so you're protecting those around you. Because if you're not vaccinated, you're not, you know, you're endangering the lives of those around you. These people are all vaccinated. You see, the reality is, and the thing that we're living delusionally in here, and I'll have another story to relate to this in a little bit, is that you're protecting yourself by getting vaccinated. This is where I have the contention in this whole issue. I don't have an argument with the fact that it seems to be that the vaccine seems to be working to keep people out of the hospital, to keep people from hospitalization, to minimize the symptoms. That seems to be, the data shows that. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. In the meantime, it seems that the people who are carrying this thing are vaccinated. So who are the super spreaders, and who is it that's just as likely to spread? You know, they talk about the unvaccinated are dangerous. They're a danger to their society. They're a danger to those people around them. Fauci keeps saying, you have a responsibility to society to be vaccinated. You're endangering the lives of those around you. No, you're endangering your own life. Why don't we just state it the way it is? If he wants to say you need to get the vaccine because it might save your life, it might keep you out of the hospital, especially if you have comorbidities or any other issues. Okay, I'll buy that. Let's just tell the people the truth. You tell the nation the truth, and then or tell the people the truth, and the nation will be saved. So I think it's one thing. I don't know if Lincoln said that or not, but I don't know if he originated it, but he said it. So let's go on with this little story here.
So 120 in the original company group, 70 of those tested positive, but they also infected 50 others in the hotel. At the same evening. The 26th of November, by the way, was the evening, or the 26th of November was the day where the World Health Organization named the Omicron variant as a variant of concern. Half have tested positive for Omicron. It's more than half, as we said, it's 70 out of the 120. 13 have been confirmed with sequencing. The others are assumed to be Omicron from the S gene dropout that we know about. So it looks like most of those are in fact, Omicron variant. Dr. Tini Ravlo, Oslo Infectious Diseases. They have symptoms like fever, cough, headache, muscle pain, fatigue. Interesting. So they have got symptoms, as quite a lot of people are symptomatic in the group. But now, and this was as of yesterday, actually, this was yesterday's report, none of them have become severely ill and none of them have been treated in hospital. So of the 120, so far, zero have become ill.
They were fully vaccinated. So that, no one that we know of so far with Omicron has been hospitalized that we know of. Now there's got to be somebody out there with comorbidities that would not be able to even withstand Omicron, even if it is more mild in the symptoms. But so far, and here's the problem with all these dollars data. There's so many variables. There's so many things that we have to put into play. There has been one paper that I still has not been explained, and it was one of the things that was said, and this came out of South Africa, that it has Omicron has only spread among the vaccinated. And so there's that. Does it spread easily or much more easily among vaccinated individuals or not? We don't know. There's no data. Nobody's reporting on that. I don't know if anybody's studying that. Does it spread easier among unvaccinated individuals? We don't know. The other thing is, we'll get into this a little bit later, but does it, if you are vaccinated, this is really the question that has yet to be answered that I think really needs to be answered. If you are vaccinated and you contract COVID, and now there's a reason I'm asking this question, because later on he tells a story about a couple people who, I'll explain it when I get there. But the question is, if you are vaccinated and you contract COVID, do you develop natural immunity? Is your body able to do that? I have yet to hear of a study or talk about anybody saying that happens. Other than just people suggesting that it happens, but there's no data to back that up. There's not been one study on this, that at least that we've been told. I'm highly suspicious. All we have is doctors saying, "Oh, well, yes, you're to be. If you've had COVID and you've had the vaccine, then you're like 10 times more immune to this thing than." You know, much more protection, 100 times more protection or whatever it was, I think Dr. Oz said. Really, based on what evidence? What study are you citing here? They never cite a study. They just say it. It's just, well, oh, you're going to go because of this. Just work the math. What math are you basing it on? This is the thing that bothers me about these kinds of statements, because we're also being told that the vaccine is safe and effective. Well, it's not as effective as we were told it was. So is it as safe as we were told it was? You can't talk about actual numbers of how safe it is. I mean, there have been people died from this vaccine. Okay, there have been. There have been people, more people died from the virus. But there have been people who've died from the vaccine. So tell that person it was safe and effective. How safe is it? Well, let's quantify it at least. Let's say, okay, you've got a 99% chance of having no reaction to the vaccine. You have a 1% chance of having a reaction, and any of those 1%, 1% of those people will potentially be hospitalized or die. Okay, where are those numbers? And if you say those numbers, will you be excommunicated from social media? But we have no numbers. They won't give us the numbers. Why not? Because they're afraid that if anybody, one person dies, well, if we just say that one person dies, then nobody's gonna want to take the virus or the vaccine. just give us the numbers. We can make our own decisions. So the problem is all. I'm more leery of the cover up, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too. Got a lot to talk about. We've only got 20 minutes left. Let's keep going here with this little story.
It's encouraging. And this is actually 15 days ago now, I think. So the time is ticking on. So the next day, one of the two employees recently returned from South Africa tested positive, and then the other ones were found as well. Now, Norway's state epidemiologist, Frode Froidland, sheer number of people infected at a single event, Omicron considerably more infectious than the Delta. So the sheer number of people that are infected, 120 people are altogether infected in that one evening, shows that this is a highly transmissible variant. The Omicron is more transmissible than the Delta. And when we look at what happened to Norway, this is really quite telling as well. Where are we? There we are. So this is Norway throughout the pandemic. So pretty low cases, what we might call first, second and third wave in Norway, but low numbers all the way through, really, until we get to the end here where we see this sudden increase here. And it looks like a lot of this is now Omicron driven. So way more numbers in Norway than there ever have been, probably originating, many of them originating in that particular party.
All right. So he goes, if you look at this chart, he's got this, all these waves of different infection rates as they go through the year. And this last part of the chart is a hockey stick. It goes up 10 times higher than any other numbers on the chart in terms of outbreak. This is what he's saying, is that Omicron probably is in that area and it's outpacing. Now this, again, he goes through this whole process and he says, and this is where the crux of this thing is, you know, should we be welcoming Omicron? Because if people get Omicron and they have natural immunity, this could be the end. As he says in, later on in his little report, I'm not sure if I'll play this part or not, but it could definitely be the beginning of the end, which is good news. Now, there are some stories here. I think this is the area. Let me see if I can find the area. I apologize for having to puddle through this a little bit, but there are some areas I didn't bookmark that I probably should have.
Called coronavirus. And the professor in Norway goes on to say, that's what we've seen with other diseases beforehand. So this is a pattern he's familiar with. And of course, it then gets into more like an endemic phase. And
he's
this is me
about,
speaking. So this is not the
right end. Right now he's talking about the fact that the virus will, what does he say? It talks about how the spreadability, the best case scenario, that this doctor he's quoting, is that it becomes highly transmissible and low on symptoms. So we develop natural immunity through that. That's what I was just talking about. So he's kind of going through that whole process. So in other words, the Omicron variant is more highly transmissible than the Delta variant. In fact, there is a place here I missed the spot I really actually wanted to play. It's right here at 4, where is it at 4? I'm going to put it right here. I believe I'm going to start just a little bit early just in case I miss it. Here's something he talks about. This is kind of one of my pet peeves with the way this thing is talked about sometimes. So let's listen to this.
So many times that this is the optimal position from the virus's point of view to spread widely and not kill the host. So
okay. He says this is the optimal point of view from the virus's point of view. Let's listen to that again.
They will get a natural immunity. So the professor here is clearly saying that this will be associated with a natural immunity, which of course is absolutely brilliant if it's minimal symptomatic disease. It might be that it is now replicated and mutated so many times that this is the optimal position from the virus's point of view.
From the virus's point of view. I hope he's just being antithetical here. I hope he's just trying to relate this in a way that helps us to understand the virus. The virus doesn't have a point of view. The virus isn't thinking about how am I going to spread myself further? How am I going to do this? It just happens to be that the one mutation that works the best is the one that's going to win the day. It's not thinking about how it winning. It's not thinking, the virus doesn't think about winning or losing. It doesn't have a collective brain, as I said earlier. And yet, I hear it talked about this way sometimes, and it's like we're personalizing, we're anthropomorphizing, whatever it is, this thing. And it doesn't have a brain, okay? It doesn't think this way. But I get it if he's just trying to relate it to a scientific data format that it's understandable, but that's not what's happening. And I think people kind of get this mentality that it's out there and it's thinking about us and it's trying to get us. It's hiding behind a bush.
To spread widely and not kill the host. So what the virus wants to do.
The virus apparently has a desire, a will, a calling, if you will, that it's trying to fulfill. That's not what it's happening. So what the virus wants to do, I'll let him go on to explain this. What the virus wants to do
is to reproduce as much as possible. And if it goes around killing people, it's going to reproduce less, because if it kills someone, it's not going to carry on reproducing from that person. So it's natural that viruses do evolve to become milder.
So it's natural that viruses do evolve to become milder. No, it's just that the milder strain that is more transmissible is the one that wins the day, because it goes to more people because those people survive and they continue to carry the virus and they transmit it quicker. And that's the one that wins. It's also the one that gives us, still gives us natural immunity to that virus. And then goes away. Now, there's a guy who did a video the other day talking about this particular type of virus and how it's always going to be with us and we're going to have to live with it forever. Interesting video. It's about 10 minutes long. I'm not sure I agree with everything he says. Of course, he gets near the end of it. He talks about us being part of the great apes and our social interactions and how we choose to live. I think from a philosophical point of view, where this guy's coming from, I think he's way off. However, I do agree that there are some questions we need to ask ourselves with regard to how we decide to live our lives, even in the face of death. Do we choose to huddle and cower away from everyone, or do we just embrace life with each other the way it is and have a quality of life, be it short-lived, that goes beyond hiding from each other and living a little bit longer in solitude? I think that's kind of what he's trying to ask, the question he's trying to ask. I think it's a question society needs to answer. But the other side of that is, do we, you know, basically, government right now is saying, well, freedom, you know, if you want freedom, we need freedom. We have freedom. We're here offering freedom to you if you comply. All you have to have, you know, in order to attain freedom here is just to comply. If you don't comply, you don't get freedom. Because we're protecting your freedom if you comply. We're not protecting your freedom if you don't comply. In other words, be our slave and you get freedom. That's the way it's coming across, because that's the way it is. Now, I think that's what's putting off a lot of people. It puts me off, this whole thing. And again, I'm choosing to live my life a certain way. I don't believe I'm endangering anyone else. I believe that people who are vaccinated and carrying the virus are just as deadly as someone who's unvaccinated and carrying the virus. Maybe even more so, because they don't show any symptoms. Maybe. I'm just saying it's a ridiculous, delusional idea that somehow being unvaccinated endangers society more than... The only thing it does is it's going to cost more for medical attention if I go into the hospital. However, I believe natural immunity still is far superior, and that's what the studies show. But I digress.
It looks like this process has been accelerated, as we saw yesterday when we said Omicron caught a cold. In other words, it got a particular genetic sequence from a common cold, coronavirus. And the professor in Norway goes on to say, that's what we've seen with other diseases beforehand. So this is a pattern he's familiar with. And of course, it then gets into more like an endemic phase. And this is me speaking. So
he talks about this not being the end. It's not the beginning, but it's rather the beginning of the end. So that he thinks that Omicron may be the beginning of the end. Now, I'd like to change gears here a little bit and talk about this other fellow. This was a Fox 5 broadcast, I believe. I don't know where this is at. I can't read the little thing down there at the bottom. Where are these people? Let's see. Tyrone, Georgia. Fox 5, Tyrone, Georgia. They have a report of a medical doctor in that area who refused to get the vaccine and is a doctor who's been treating COVID patients all this time, refuses to get the vaccine, and he was let go because of it, terminated. Now, he found another job. He got a job in Alabama, I believe, with a hospital that doesn't have a mandate. The some interesting things in this story that I want to talk about, and let's just kind of dive into it. This local news organization is doing a story on him. They bring in some other people at the end that talk about some things, and it's, of course, they kind of try to politicize it. They do try to show both sides of this thing, but in my opinion, they bring in a political bent. So let's talk about this guy for now. Let's listen to his story here.
There are troubling side effects.
Is COVID just like the flu?
Absolutely not.
Do you think that hospitals are inflating the numbers to make more money?
No, I do not buy that. With this Delta wave, it's like drinking out of a fire hydrant. We've been seeing big numbers.
And he stressed.
Now, this is the doctor. This is the guy who said, you know, he's admitting that we're seeing big numbers. And he's talking about the numbers that they're seeing are people who are unvaccinated.
This is almost all the COVID patients he's had to admit are unvaccinated.
Can you see it from the hospital's perspective? They're, as you said, dealing with a fire hose of problems with unvaccinated patients, and they've got a doctor who refuses to be vaccinated.
I think what the hospital should be doing is actually the same thing they were doing when this pandemic first started, which is to support anybody willing to risk their life to come in and to provide care for patients who are needing help.
If the numbers are showing that unvaccinated people are appearing in your hospital far more than the vaccinated ones, what's the problem with vaccines?
I'm not here to say that I'm against vaccines, okay? That's one thing I want to make perfectly clear. Nowhere have I ever said don't get the vaccine. Building this.
So he's not against people getting the vaccine. And this guy keeps pushing him on, well, why not just get the vaccine? Well, that's his choice. And that's because it doesn't affect the people around him. It affects him. It's his decision for his body and the way he chooses to live. And he'll explain a little bit later in this I think I've already gotten to, I went past that part already. The part here that I want you to hear, let's see if I can find this next part of the story here. We'll go with this. He's still being interviewed here. He makes some. Yeah, let's go from here.
In front of every patient encounter the entire time I'm in the hospital.
Do your patients know you're not vaccinated?
That's not something I share, no.
Why? And do you think maybe they would want to know that?
If they want to know, they're free to ask. A lot of the patients I see, you've got to remember, are coming in because they haven't been vaccinated.
They're like you.
They're like me.
And for him.
So he makes a deal out of the fact that he's not telling people he's vaccinated. Not vaccinated. Now, I would be more interested in whether or not the person's vaccinated or not, simply because they could be sick and not, I wouldn't know it. I think it would be a little bit more scary for an unvaccinated individual. See, this is where we've got our thinking is backwards on this. And I think it's because of our general expectations of what a vaccine is. We think of a vaccine as that prevents us from getting it or carrying it. It does neither of those. It is a vaccine that only reduces symptoms, which is actually a little bit more dangerous with regard to society, because now we hide the symptoms and we can be carrying it around. That's my point that I'm trying to make here. And I think that's, if we just had that reality kind of drilled into us a little bit better, I think we could understand much better what's really going on here, what my troubling issues are with this thing.
Vaccines require boosters.
So you think in your personal situation, getting the virus is less dangerous than getting the vaccine?
No, what I'm saying is I don't want to get either one.
What I'm saying is I don't want to get either one. he's saying that there's one more point I think that he makes on here that I think I would like to, get that one there. Let's find this other point that he makes that I think is really critical. And I want to make a statement on this. Here he is. I'm going to cut in just a little ahead of this so I don't miss anything he says.
Be the difference maker in saving lives.
That vaccine is keeping people from getting severe disease. I will agree with that. It's too soon to know what long-term implications this vaccine could have.
When will we know whether you're wrong or you were right?
I don't know the answer to that.
And here's the answer to that. He knows that he's right for him. What he decides for him is what's right for him. Because he's only right or wrong for himself. And he has to do the best he can. This is a guy who's knowledgeable. Obviously, he's a doctor. He's not just some plumber who says, oh, I don't want to take, I'm going to take some horse medicine. He's not that guy. Not that guy was, goodness, that guy could be right too. You never know. This is a guy who's educated and it's in his field. And he's saying that he doesn't know what the long-term implications of this thing are. Now, having said all that, the FDA was just charged. The FDA was going to give out information, the Pfizer information, on the study. I think it was like a 309,000 page document or something like that. And they had they were giving out 500 pages a year. I think is what they were going to give out. It was going to take 55 years for all the information on the study for the Pfizer, the FDA approval process. Then they asked for a 75-year disclosure rate. A federal judge has just, within the last couple of days, has just basically said, release all the documents. He ruled on the whole thing and said, you got to release the documents now in a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act. And they've been released, and they're being poured through. And my understanding is that the information is not very good. There were a lot more deaths reported with the Pfizer vaccine than what they are letting you know about. Now, I just recently saw a headline. I don't know where it is. Let me see if I can see it here somewhere. I saw it this morning. It's probably already been buried by my feed. But there was a basketball player that... football player, age 31. Just passed away. I don't know why. I was going to look at that and see what the cause of death was. I know that in London, England, and in some other countries, there have been a sharp increase in the number of soccer players dropping dead. There have also been a number of pilots. I have a lot of pilot friends still involved in the pilot world and the flying world. And there have been an overwhelming, sharp increase in the number of pilot deaths in the last 9 months. I cannot find the football player's headline here. I wish I could find that. I can't find it. Maybe I might be able to find it just doing a regular search here. Let's see what I can find here. Let's go to, sometimes just this little news blurb here. Has it? Let's see if it's on here. I doubt it. Probably won't be. Nope, don't see it there either. Not there, not there. Nowhere to be found. Probably was. It's probably already been scrubbed. Apparently, on another note, extradition of Assange is probably going to be, it's probably going to happen to the U.S. It's going to be interesting to see what happens under this administration, whether or not he is prosecuted, whatever ends up happening. Who's going to face jury trial there? Election worker play. Blah, blah. Yeah, so COVID detection mask. Oh, interesting. there's also other things going on in the news, by the way. Let's go back here to YouTube and let's just take a look at Julian Assange can be extradited to the U.S. court rules in wherever he was staying, so he can be extradited. Just a couple other things. Let's say let's look at let's go to this particular site. See if there's any other headlines here as we go into the weekend here. The whole Shabbat Shalom thing. Former Broncos player and NFL star wide receiver Denarius Thomas dies at 33. This is the one I was looking for. Just have to be at the top of the mark here on the. Doesn't see if it gives a cause of death. Played Thomas when he was heartbroken and posted himself. Cause of Thomas' death wasn't immediately known. Police said Thomas was found dead inside his Georgia preliminary. His agents did not believe. Preliminary information is that his death stems from a medical issue. And our investigators currently have no reason to believe otherwise. Well, that's interesting. No information on why he died. Demarius Thomas. Yeah, nothing. Cause of death was not immediately known. Well, yeah. Don't know. I can only speculate. This is sad news. Obviously, we don't know what the reason was why he passed, but don't know if that was because of any kind of issues associated with the vaccine, who knows, or COVID for that matter. We have, what's the other news here? I was gonna bring up some other things here. What is that? Oh, that's, there we go. Get rid of that. So we have Democrats' internal polling paints grim picture for Pelosi. Yeah, she's going to lose the House again. I believe Pelosi is probably going to retire at the end of this year. BLM backs Small A, calls trial white supremacist charade. Are you serious? You've got to be out of your lily-livered mind to think that Jesse Smollett, Juicy, whatever you want to call him, this guy is living in a delusional, weird, this is such a, like I said, it's such a harbinger of where we are today. People who cannot face reality or when they're faced with reality, they just continue to buckle down and double down and lie about reality. It's absolutely pathetic. It says a lot about BLM, I guess. They're willing to back this guy. Just the story on its face is so pathetically ridiculous. I'm going to get into it. GOP senators attack latest McConnell debt ceiling sellout as a crap sandwich. It's time for Mitch McConnell to retire as well. Biden announces U.S. taxpayers will fund media around the world. Great. Josh Duggar found guilty on child pornography charges. I don't know who Josh Duggar is. Hunter Biden's awful behavior was worse than you knew. They're finally starting to admit that. He's expendable now. They got the placeholder in there. No jab, no food. Canadian province. Providence seeks to starve vaccine resistant. If you don't get the vaccine, you don't get to eat. Dude, what does that sound like? McConnell twisting GOP arms to lock down votes to pass debt deal. We're being railroaded here by the GOP establishment. Illegals rush the border as Biden goes back to Trump rules. They're still blaming Trump. In fact, they blame Trump on the Jesse Smollett thing. The left, they can twist it around. They can twist any of this stuff around to blame whoever they want to. And that's what they do. That's why I've always said you can't expect them to admit to any wrongdoing or to put any of this stuff. And here's something else I keep hearing. Every time I hear this thing about the January, this afternoon show is going to be all about the January 6th issue. And the people who are Marjorie Taylor Greene, she just started. She's leading up a force to go against the atrocities that are happening with the January 6th rioters. I'm going to call them that. There's some very serious stuff going on with them. It's pathetic. This is political dissidence here. This is political punishment. Without a trial. This has gone on for almost a year now. They've been in prison for almost a year. And they're being mistreated horribly. Not given their constitutional rights. Not treated like... And the sad part of it is... Next subject. Here are the Republican senators who supported McConnell debt limit sellout. I think this thing just refreshed. What else we got here at the top? I don't see anything else in there. Okay. Biden distances himself from push to defund police as blue states see spike in crime. Duh. Reporter interrupts White House press briefing to question Psaki, but circle back Psaki on Biden's racist travel restrictions. Interesting to see her response to that. Who, Democrat mayor from Dallas says racism within the Democrat Party is the 100 or 800 pound gorilla in the room. That's interesting that they're finally admitting that. Who now warning against vaccine mandates? Who is a World Health Organization is now warning against vaccine mandates? Rising Democrat star ruined by Virginia redistricting. Oh, too bad. Most Americans don't buy Biden's claim that Build Back Better plan fights inflation. Now, he's going to call it America, Build America Better. Build America Better, I think is what it's called now. He's trying to change. They've got their focus groups in there. Now they're going to change it a little bit. Well, let's Build America Better instead of Build Back Better, because everybody in the world is saying Build Back Better. Let's just change it. Build America Better. We'll just change that one word out. New Attorney General Letitia James has suspended her campaign for governor. Some information has come out about her. Chairwoman of Racial Equity Committee resigns after publicizing personal information of parents who pushed back against school board leftist agenda. She doxed them. The chairman of a racial equity committee doxed the parents who are pushing back against the school board's leftist agenda. Union adopts mob-type tactics as strike disrupts filming of movie adaptation of Steve Deesh. I don't know what that is. Deesh? Book? Nefarious. I don't know what that is. James O'Keefe of Project Veritas scores major win in case of the Biden diary. I haven't heard what that is about yet. Most Americans are anti-vax according to new definitions. The reason is because most Americans are against the mandates. If you are vaccinated, if you've always taken vaccines, and you happen to be vaccinated, but you don't believe that the vaccines should be mandated, you are anti-vax. That's the new definition. Senate votes down Biden's vax mandate. Let's talk about this for a minute, because this is a worthless story. I hear a lot of hype about, Senate has blocked Biden's vaccine mandate. No, they haven't. This was a proposal. This was a bill that passed the Senate. I think it was 52 to 48. In order to stop the vaccine mandate. Well, the problem, this was all show. It's going to go to the House. The House is not going to vote to stop to vote for this legislation. It's not going to pass the House. And even if it does pass the House, it didn't pass the Senate with enough to override a veto from the president. This is not a bill that they didn't vote to stop something. This was a bill that they introduced to stop something, and that bill has to pass all the way through Congress and the House and the executive branch in order to stop the mandate. It's not going to pass. This is dead on its face. They won't even get a vote in the Congress. I guarantee you, Nancy Pelosi will not even bring this to the table, even though a vast majority of people, including a high percentage of Democrats, are against the mandates. But they don't see it that way. They don't care about some things they're willing to die on. This is one of those hills. So, having said all that I have said, I think I should probably be done with this show because I'm going over time already. My producer's yelling at me. It's my dog. He's actually just laying over there sleeping. But that's his way of yelling. I can tell. He wants the show to be over. And I got other work to do. So, I digress. I'll have to pack my bags to get ready to travel. I'm going to try to get a show out this afternoon if I can. And got a lot to do yet between now and this evening. An interesting day for me. So, God bless everybody. Whether you're on the left or the right or in the middle or up or down or wherever you are. We need to continue to pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, pray for each other. Take care, everybody. God bless. Shabbat shalom. Have a great weekend.